Collective Minds Radio.
Stand on your square, we on the earth, we about to earn it out. Tune in and turn it up to hear what we talking about, whether it's old or a new point. Call in with your viewpoint and add to our collective of colorful perspective. The brothers, word to the mothers of the queens and the kings. We gon' get into some things, dig deep and going deeper, waking up the sleeper. Who be been the peeper? Yeah, your boy done found a keeper. See, we talking
like
it is what it is.
Peace, peace, family. We back. This brother Kev, a.k.a. Cosmic Kev.
This is your girl, Queen Raiju.
Hotel for Bobby Ghani. Assalamu alaikum. This is brother Montoya, a.k.a. Mufasa Ra.
And we are Collective Minds Radio, back y'all for another week, hopefully to share some constructive dialogue with the family at Collective Minds Radio. We all ain't got to think alike, but we all got to think. So hit us up, y'all, hear what everyone thinks, and we value, you know, everyone's opinion on any given subject. So hit us up, give us a call. The number here is 929-477-1697, and we have a powerful guest and a powerful topic we're going to be discussing today. But before we get into that, Raiju and Mufasa, how was y'all week, and do y'all have any announcements for the family?
I had a wonderful, wonderful week. Thankful, to be able to come and say that again, that my week was great. And no announcements. I just still want to encourage everybody to, let's not take life for granted. Let's not take the people around us for granted. You know, nothing is promised. Tomorrow isn't promised. We're not promised. The people around us not promised. So, you know, just keep that in mind as we go on through our days and our weeks. You know, let's spread some love around. Let's be happy. Let's be peaceful. At least we can be peaceful. We don't have to rest in peace. We can live in peace. So I just wanted to put that out there.
That's right.
And that's about it.
All right. Brother Mufasa, how was your week? And you got any announcements for us?
Very, very good week. Entertained. I got family in town. You know, my cousins came in, so I've been enjoying them this weekend. And, I ain't really got no special, no big announcements. I do want to give a shout-out to everyone who's doing the work at liberating the hearts and minds of black people in America. And also I want to extend that, though, as a shout-out to everyone who's trying to bring righteousness into this planet, who's trying to live a righteous life and uplift humanity. So shout out to everybody that's doing the good work out there.
All right. Yes, indeed. My week was good as always. You know what I'm saying? I had a good week. I do want to get on a quick soapbox because there's been some things that's been happening. And I promise y'all it won't take long. We're going to get right into it. But I've been noticing that the media has been trying to drum up support for a war against Iran, right? And I've been seeing some things like 2 weeks ago, there was a oil liner supposedly that got hit or got shot by some type of gunfire, missile fire that they were saying Iran did, right? So now this past week, they were saying that Iran shot down a U.S. drone, you know. So basically what I'm seeing is propaganda for the media to try to get support for going to war against Iran, right? And we've seen this throughout history. We've seen it with Vietnam. We've seen it with the first Iraq war, the second Iraq war, Afghanistan. All these wars, if you notice, they can use, you know, fake news stories to get the public to support. And it's crazy because with the public not doing their research and not really thinking for themselves, they'll go along with this propaganda and be like, yeah, we need to blow them up and do this and do that. But they don't understand that war is a very ugly thing. You feel what I'm saying? You have civilians, a lot of civilians that get killed in war. And, you know, it's just an ugly thing for me to see, like, people online talking about, yeah, we need to go and bomb them and do this and do that. It's like, for what? What are you talking about? You're going basing your information off something somebody gave you. You've never met a person from Iran. You know, you don't know what type of people these people are. You dig what I'm saying? You don't have a personal beef with them, but because you let the media, you know, put that battery in your back, you know, people want to get all emotion and talk about supporting a war. So I just wanted to put that out there. You know, I've called it in the past. I don't know if I said it on the show, but I do predict that there may be, you know, a major announcement for a war by the end of this year or even next year. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just stay tuned, like I say, and always do your research. Always be skeptical about the information that they put out, because as we know, they've lied and coerced the public into supporting fake wars before, right? And anybody who knows or does any type of research understands that this has happened a lot within U.S. history. So, you know, I just wanted to say, people, be diligent. Pay attention to what's going on. Like I said, I just stop back and observe as an observer and just kind of see what's going on. So I just wanted to put that out there. And don't be surprised if you see something else that the media says Iran did, and that'll be the push to go ahead and start the war. So just wanted to put that out there. But without further ado, y'all, this is Collective Minds Radio. I am Cosmic Kev with Brother Mufasa and Queen Rigel, and we are talking about the Central Park 5 case, in particular the movie that came out that was done by Ava DuVernay called When They See Us. Now, When They See Us is a docuseries drama. I think it's like a 4-part series where they go into the case of the young brothers who were accused in 1989. You had Raymond Santana, Kevin Richardson, Yusuf Salam, Antron McCray, and Corey Wise. And these young men were between 14 and 16 at the time. They were convicted of rape and assault of a white woman who was was jogging in Central Park that evening. And come to find out, well, they were convicted with no physical evidence. The only thing they had was a choppy confession that really kind of looked coerced. According to the movie, you know, some of their parents were not in the interrogation room, so there was a lot of stuff going on with the case. But come to find out, these young brothers got exonerated in 2002. A guy named Matias Reyes ended up admitted to the crime, and he said that he did it alone. But those brothers ended up spending 6 to 13 years in prison, basically robbing them of their youth. You know, according to the docuseries, the lead prosecutor, Linda Feinstein, you know, she was just trying to get a conviction on these young men. They show that Trump also took out a ad in the major newspapers, the New York Post and the New York Times, and he took out an ad and paid $85,000 calling for the death penalty of these young men. And even when they were exonerated, Linda Feinstein and Trump, you know, declined to apologize or offer any type of, apology to these young men based on the new evidence that came out. They're still saying they're guilty and they actually, you know, kind of doubling down on it. So that's what we're talking about today in a nutshell. We're talking about the, you know, the psychology of the Central Park Five. You know, what does this say to the black community? Will this help the criminal justice system? You know, and we'll get into all that, and we should have a special guest joining us here as well in a little bit. But before we get to our guests, we're going to go to Rigel, or Queen Rigel and Mufasa, and just want to know, you know, what are y'all overall thoughts on this particular case? And if you've seen the movie, you know, give us some thoughts on the docuseries as well.
Yes,
yes, Queen
Rigel,
we go to you.
Yeah, I saw it. I watched it with my daughter. And, you know, I've expressed this before, just how, you know, interesting this is. And I think Brother Kevin and I may have spoke about this as well. You know, it's like they put all these things in these film and these movies, and they basically expose the crookedness, you know, behind the scenes of what goes on. Now, I know, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners, I guess, will also be able to vouch for this to be a true statement, that this, those tactics that were shown in the docuseries about the Central Park Five case, there's nothing new. Those tactics are old tactics. They've been doing it forever. They're still doing it. And it's like, They're basically saying, yeah, this is what we do. Yeah, this is how we get down. You know, so it's like, now what? You know, now what's the approach? It's almost like somebody saying, yeah, I spit in your mama's face. Now what? You know, so it's like, okay, at this point now, you know, it seems like, how is that going to affect the psychological impact of the community now? You know, is that going to make people more watchful, more cautious, you know, be a little more stand up about things, or is it going to, you know, that's what I'm interested in hearing some comments and some feedback about that as well. You know, psychologically, how does this make you live now? You know, how does this change you? How does this impact your life? You know, I just think it's very interesting, you know, that that this can be shown like this. And we already, well, it didn't take this movie for us to know this. You know, we've always known it. You know, now that it's out and people can see it, it's like I'm interested in knowing now what is going to be some of the behaviors in people now. You know, what's going to be done about the justice system and the people that run, because that type of behavior, like you say, they never apologize about what they did. They never, you know, say they were sorry about anything. Those are the type of people that we need to be careful, you know, be careful about and protect ourselves from. The community needs to be protected from people that can do malicious crimes and do bad things to people and not, you know, just not even care. It's like, you know, they still want to figure out a way to justify it in their mind just so they can, you know, sleep at night. And we had these people running and being overseers of, you know, the community. It's just not a good thing, you know. So I don't know, people who support the people like the Trumps, and it's like, how can you want to support somebody like that that can't even be a stand-up person to even admit when they're wrong about something?
Exactly. Yes, indeed. All right. Yes, indeed. My brother Mufasa, now I know I don't think you had a chance to see the docuseries, but from what you know about the case, you know, what are your overall thoughts on that, the Central Park Five case?
Well, yeah, you definitely said it right. I didn't get the opportunity to watch that documentary on Netflix. I won't watch that documentary on Netflix because, as y'all know, I have a personal a personal thing against Netflix that I'm boycotting. I don't fool with Netflix because of what they did to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan with not wanting to put his program on celebrating his musical career. So because it's on Netflix, no, I won't be partaking in seeing on that streaming service. But I am familiar with the case, and I agree with everything that Queen Raja said. I mean, she said it all in a nutshell. This ain't nothing new of what they do. And when you talk about what the community going to do moving forward now, I'm interested in that, too, because we throw these things out there for us to see. And just like watching it on Netflix as a movie, I feel like people watch, that's how black people watch each other's lives as a movie. We see these things and we don't react and take the productive steps necessary to counteract these things that this society is doing to us. And so I'm just as curious as she is on how we're going to move forward. Even though these brothers got exonerated from this years ago, and Netflix decided that, you know, they chose to take this time to put it out there and stir it back up for the world to see. So I'm curious. I want to see how black folks is going to react to it as well. You know, but, yeah, I definitely didn't agree with what the brothers went through. It was wrong. They do it all the time to us. They're going to continue to do it to us. And, you know, it's shameful. Yeah, I don't have too much to say about it. Roger said it all.
Yes, indeed.
Said, no, I don't have to say too much about it.
All right, all right. If you're just joining us, family, this is Collective Minds Radio, and we are discussing the psychology behind Central Park Five. Now, as we wait on our special guest here, you know, I just want to provide, like, some of the things that I took away from this, and I mentioned this on a few shows before because immediately after I seen it, you know, I had a lot of emotions and, you know, a lot of things was going through my head. And I even compared this documentary and the feelings that I was feeling, I compared it to the same time that I saw Roots, right? I wasn't old enough to see it when Roots first aired, but I don't know if y'all know, when Roots first aired, it was a major thing on major television, right? It was like a mini series. It was prime time. It was on NBC, I believe. Yeah. You know, and it was a major thing throughout the country. Yeah, it was real big. And prior to that, I don't think a lot of people knew, you know, the intricates or the details about slavery. But after Roots, that's where everybody got their, you know, most of the knowledge about slavery. If you didn't go into the slave narratives and the logs and journals of the slaves. So that was the first time on a mass scale that we learned about slavery. So, again, I didn't get to see it when it first aired, but I saw it years later as, let's say, a preteen. I believe I was maybe 9 or 10 when I saw it. And the emotions that I felt, it was like anger. You know, I was upset. Mad at white people, you dig what I'm saying? I felt vulnerable, I felt kind of helpless, and all those emotions that I felt when I was watching Roots, those particular emotions came back up watching this docudrama, right? Because, you know, there was a lot of anger, it was just like a feeling of helplessness, like they did a great job of getting in close to these young actors and showing their emotions. You know, they did a great job with the writing. It just really drew you in, you know, as a observer of the movie. And so with those feelings I had, it was like, okay, I had to even snap back and be like, hold on, okay, this happens all the time. This is nothing new. And I had to kind of snap back in my original state of being just an observer and not getting too emotional. But it was hard, you know, due to the visual and how they portrayed this particular story. So I've heard even some people say the story was a horror flick, you know what I'm saying? Which I can kind of go with that too, to a certain degree. you know, I can kind of go with that too to a certain degree, because the story was horrific when you see how, you know, the gentleman was the young men were interrogated without parents, without, you know, interrogated for hours and hours without any food, you know, and things like that. So it was very dramatic. And like I say, the emotions that ran through were very deep. And I can tell by the response online that it hit a lot of people that way as well. So, you know, the question is, with all that emotion and things, I guess I could shoot this to Mufasa. What message would you say that a case like this, even without seeing the movie, with a case like this, what message or what do you think black people can learn from something like this? Or is there anything, you know, that we can learn from something like this?
The message that black people should get is, regardless of all the strides, you know, we've accomplished in this country, we are still behind enemy lines. And if you don't keep that in your mind, you set yourself up for a possible failure. It's like what one of the young men said, and I'm keeping it in context that these were kids, though. But as adults, you know, I've heard one or two of the young men say, you know, if we hadn't have been there following a particular older crowd, we wouldn't even have been in that environment. We wouldn't even have been there. You know, and the one guy was like, you know, the only thing I'm guilty of is I jumped over the turnstile. But I did hear them say that, you know, we wouldn't even have been there hadn't been following a certain type of crowd. So we have to train ourselves and our children. We have to show them the pitfalls that they can fall into in this country. And you can't take the fact that, I mean, I understand that we're all humans and humanity is, you know, we are striving to become one and this, that. I get all that. But the truth is, people still see color. And when you're dealing with racist cops and you're black, you got to understand that they're looking at you as already, because of what they may be dealing with in a particular area, just because they're hateful anyway, they're already looking at you as an enemy. So we have to be careful of our steps in this country. And I know people say, well, that's not fair. We shouldn't have to do that. But the reality is, yes, we are behind enemy lines. And the sooner that people can realize that and understand that and implement that into their way of living, the better protected you and your family will be. You know, you have to move accordingly and understand where you at in this world, how you deal with police, how you deal with people that don't look like you, how you deal with people that look like you but would put you in a bad situation. You know, we have to train ourselves to avoid, do our best to avoid certain pitfalls and things of that nature. You know, train each other. We got to train ourselves, train our kids. But, yeah, that's one of the things that I do remember hearing the young men say as adults is, you know, they wish if they went back, they probably wouldn't even been in that situation. They wouldn't have followed the crowd that they was with even to that area. Because they admitted, yeah, they was doing some foolish things. They wasn't doing nothing like that, like they tried to put on them. But they were doing some foolish things, being foolish as kids, which a lot of us, you know, have done. So, yeah, you got to be aware of our surroundings.
Right, and that's one of the things that I kind of took away is, you know, as black people, and especially black boys are really not allowed to be kids, to be boys. You know, when they do, you know, mischievous things and, you know, just act out as teenagers and do certain things, they're hit with a heavier hand than, let's say, some white kids. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's one of the messages that, unfortunately, we have to teach our kids that, you know, a lot of times we're not allowed to be just kids and make kids' mistakes. We have to grow up fast. You know, we have to pay attention to our surroundings, pay attention to who we follow, you know, and things like that, because this system, again, will come down and give you the heavy-handed punishment, you know, if you're a black male. And they've even had studies to where they say, you know, they look at black kids as being grown men even when they like teenagers. You know, a 15, 16-year-old would be considered a man. A 15, 16-year-old black boy, black teenager would be considered a man in the eyes of society. And that's how, you know, society kind of treats them. We can look at the Tamir Rice case. Young boy, 12 years old, playing with a gun, playing with a toy gun in a park with nobody around, and a, you know, cop comes up and just shoots him with no warning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the type of thing we got to deal with. Also, I think another thing that we can, another thing that we can learn from this, because you was like, you know, it could be some racist cops, but my thing is, it's even deeper than the cops, because we have all mm-hmm. these different institutions, right? We had the DA's office, the assistant district attorney, you know, the prosecutor, even the judge, even the media. Yeah. So all these different institutions were in cahoots, and I think it's very important for black people to understand that the mainstream media is not on your side, if you don't know that by now. Again, the mainstream mm-hmm. media is not on your side. So any information that they put out, we have to be skeptical about it, and we have to scrutinize and look at it for what it is with a grain of salt until we can do further research, because we know that these people lie, and they always go with the narrative of, you know, criminalizing the black male figure or the black people in general. That's the code they stick with, and that's what they go by. So all these media institutions, you talk about CNN to Fox News, all of them are under the system of white supremacy, as far as I'm concerned, and they stick to the script when it comes to that. So they're going to always criminalize and convict the black person in the court of public opinion. So that's one thing we have to get through our heads, that these people all work in tandem and they work in cahoots with each other to undermine us and make us look as if we're all criminals. You dig what I'm saying? So that's another takeaway that we can get from this situation. But go ahead, Mufasa, if you
One question was, since I didn't watch that particular doctor series, but did they speak anything about the victim, especially after these young men were exonerated? Did the victim say anything in regards to what the young man went through?
Well, in the docuseries, they did show the victim on the stand. She was able to, because she was in a coma for a while, but she was able to come to and take the stand. Now, when she took the stand, she did not identify any of the, she did not identify any of the young men as being the perpetrators. You know, basically she was just saying she couldn't remember. Now, after the fact, as far as the research that I've done and listening to the interviews, you know, from the brothers, they were just saying that she never wanted to relive the case, or she never wanted to say anything else about the case. Even after they were exonerated, I believe one of them said that they would have been willing to reach out to her and speak with her, but she didn't want any contact from them. And I, you know, I can't really blame the victim. My main thing is with Linda Feinstein, who was the lead prosecutor, and Elizabeth Lederer, who was the assistant DA, I believe. And these two people, along with the detectives, we're not going to leave the detectives out who interrogated these people. There were three or four detectives who are also should be on the radar as far as people to watch out for and undermine. I believe one of the detectives may have passed away here recently, but the other ones that are living, these are the people that I'm concerned about. You know, Linda Feinstein, she went on to have an illustrious career as a book writer. Like, she blew up after this case. After this case, she got a book deal, a publishing deal. Elizabeth Lederer, I believe she went on to work for Columbia University, or it may have been Linda Feinstein, one of them. They ended up getting a nice job at Columbia University and just having amazing careers, and actually blew up after wrongly convicting these brothers, these young men. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing I'm concerned about. Like, all those people need to be held liable, and in a perfect world, they would actually have criminal charges against them as well. You dig what I'm saying? In a perfect world, they should have criminal charges against them. And the lady Linda, her publisher did end up dropping her. But my thing is, they knew about her when they gave her the deal. And that's what I mean by all these industries working in cahoots, because they knew when they gave her the book deal that the Central Park Five, there was no physical evidence to convict them. But yet they went on ahead and gave her the deal. And now after the fact, after it blew up and it came back to light, they want to drop her from the book deal. So, no, they don't get a pass either, as far as I'm concerned. You dig what I'm saying?
They sure
so,
don't. And we cannot forget about our president. We can't forget about Donald Trump. As much as you know, y'all know how I am, O'Donnell. But Donald didn't apologize.
No, Donald J. Trump did not apologize, and he actually doubled down on what he was saying, basically saying, you know, they admitted their guilt, and it was the police and the prosecutor say that they're guilty, so that's what he's rolling with. So like Rigel said, you know, when we're dealing with a person like that, you know, what can you do? So what we want to do now is see if we can bring our guest in. We have a special guest for the family. Again, it's Collective Minds Radio. We are talking about the psychology behind the Central Park Five case. And hopefully our special guest is joining us. We have Dr. Umar Johnson in the building. Are you with us, sir?
Peace and love, Black Power. The Prince of Pan-Africanism is here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. First off, I want to thank you for, you know, sharing some of your evening with us, brother. We definitely appreciate it. And also congratulations on the school that you've obtained that I've heard about. So congratulations on that. And before we get started, you know, if you want to give a brief introduction, if anybody may have not heard of you or lived under a rock, if you want to give a brief introduction to yourself before we get started, sir.
Certainly. Dr. Umar Johnson, Doctor of Clinical Psychology, certified school psychologist and principal, founder of the National Independent Black Parent Association, as well as you mentioned, the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Leadership Academy for Black Boys, blood relative to the great Frederick Douglass, former Minister of Education to the Honorable Marcus Garvey's UNIAACL, author of the book Psychoacademic Holocaust, the Special Education and ADHD Wars Against Black Boys.
All right. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you, family. If you're just joining us, y'all, this is Collective Minds Radio. This is Brother Kev with Queen Rigel and my brother Mufasa Ra. We have a very special guest in the building, Dr. Umar Johnson, and we are discussing the psychology behind the Central Park Five case. Now, Dr. Umar, were you able to see When They See Us by Ava DuVernay?
Unfortunately, I had not seen the documentary in its entirety. I caught a few snippets of it. I did catch a few snippets also of Oprah Winfrey's panel discussion with the actual Central Park Five, as well as the five brothers who played them in the documentary. So not infinitely familiar, but I can pretty much guess what has transpired.
Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, as far as the documentary, we had talked about, as far as visually, Ava DuVernay did a great job of getting in close and getting the emotion of these young men as they sat in the interrogation room, as they, you know, interacted with their family, the courtroom, and things like that. So it was a very powerful docuseries. But that aside, you know, I want to get your overall thoughts on the Central Park 5 case, and you know, how do you think that this case being opened back up and shed to light, you know, how is this going to affect the black psychology as we move forward and understand the justice system as we know it today?
Well, I would say this. As someone currently filming a documentary on the school-to-prison pipeline, I can tell you that very few black men are surprised that this happened. Very few black men are surprised that this happened. In fact, I would say that the Central Park 5 case is only a sample, of a much larger operation of injustice against black males. This happens every single day. And the reason that they want to reopen this and act as if they want to serve justice is only to give the illusion that something is going to be done about this systematically. One thing we as a people have to be very clear about is we have to be clear about systematic change, not Band-Aids. In other words, even if justice is brought to the Central Park Five, and you really can't bring justice to this because the trauma and pain and loss that these young men have already experienced cannot be taken back. But even if you want to just imagine that some sort of justice can be brought to the situation, it only extends to this situation. What are we going to do systematically to make sure this never happens again? It's like the individual police that are actually tried, convicted, and sent to jail for killing unarmed, defenseless black people. How many are actually convicted? So you're not bringing a solution to a systematic problem. You're simply bringing a Band-Aid to an individual case within that problem. And we as a people have to stop celebrating Band-Aids on individual case studies and wait until we get systematic change.
That's right. That's right. Now, okay, now, great. I'm glad you said that because I want to ask you this and get right back to the nuts and bolts of it. Can we repair this justice system, or does it need to be destroyed and rebuilt? What do you say, Doc?
Politically speaking, there can be a revolt, there can be a rebellion, or there can be a revolution. The criminal justice system of America was designed with criminal deliberate intent to disadvantage black people. It is inherently and systematically and organically biased, discriminatory, and racist. You cannot repair a system that operates in the manner that it was originally constructed to fulfill. You can only repair a system that is not operating. Dysfunction can be repaired. But the criminal justice system is not dysfunction. It operates exactly like it was originally intended to do, which means only a revolution. A complete destruction and 360-degree change would only bring about what we need, true justice.
That's right. That's right. Thanks. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, family. Before we get to the call lines, I want to give opportunity to Queen Rigel, Brother Mufasa, to ask our guests a question. Did y'all have a question for Dr. Umar?
No, I can hold mine.
All right. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Umar. How you doing?
Walaikum salam, black man.
I appreciate you coming on. I'm not going to ask too many questions as well because we got callers on, and I'm sure they would love to chop it up with you. But I totally agree with what you just said about the complete change, a complete teardown, you know, of this system. And it, I will ask you this, though. As far as programs that are already out, like we've had leaders like Marcus Garvey, leaders like Elijah Muhammad. We've had leaders out here who've told us these things, how to avoid these traps and these pitfalls. Do you believe that black people should still follow the programs that have already been laid out to us, or do we got to try to come up with something else to kick off this revolution that you spoke of?
We don't have to reinvent the principles, but we may have to reinvent some practices. In other words, the principles never change. The principle of unity, that never changes. The principle of revolution, that never changes. The principle of solidarity, that never changes. Our principles never change. but the manner in which we apply them need to change. So, for example, you have some archaic Africans out there who believe that we should do everything exactly as our ancestors did it. If they cooked outside with a frying pan on top of two bricks and some kerosene, we should cook outside on the frying pan on top of two bricks and some kerosene. In other words, they are valuing the practice, but they're ignoring the principle. The principle is about reducing the unnecessary expenditure of natural resources. So we stick to that principle, but the practice might look totally different. So we do have to figure out in this day and age, how do we actually apply the principles, but the principles are forever. You never change your principles, but you do change the application of them.
All right. Understood.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. If you're just joining this family, this is Collective Minds Radio. This is Brother Kev with Queen Raju and Brother Mufasa. And we have a very special guest with us, Dr. Umar Johnson. And we are discussing the psychology of the Central Park Five and its effect on the black population as a whole. We do want to go to the call lines. Queen Raju, you want to hit the call lines?
Okay, absolutely. Let's take area code 773-268. Calling on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have one question or either a comment?
Hi.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, caller. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Peace. We can hear you loud and clear, caller. Thanks for calling. Do you have a question or comment?
I just agree with everything that's being said as far as, like, you know, having a collective change. I, too, saw the docuseries, and prior to the docuseries, I was, you know, I heard about the story, you know, like them and like the Khalif Browder story and things of that nature,
right,
even before it was on Netflix. But
That's right.
I just feel what Dr. Umar Johnson just said about having that, you know, coming together is, you don't have to reinvent the wheel yet, you know, ensuring that we have different practices in place for us to ascertain to another level. It took years for us to even get to where we at, and change is definitely is a process. So I just
All
love
right.
everything people are saying, and how even wanted to say, because I was writing a book, it's called Bullshit is a Universal Language. And
right.
kind of talking about these aspects and what we're talking about. So I'm just enjoying the conversation.
Okay. Yes, indeed. We appreciate you calling. Thank you for your comment and call. All right. Let's get another call, Roger.
Okay.
She just had
area code 909-490, calling you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or comment?
Good evening.
Good evening.
You had questioned as to, I don't know, Trump supporters. I voted for the man as far as I'm not a rah-rah, everything he does is right person. But I did want to comment on that, and I agree with everything that you guys were talking about. It was wrong. These children, they're children. What's that?
Yes, I'm sorry.
You had some background.
They're children, you know, no matter how you look at it. Now, I understand from looking at the case that at that time in New York, you know, it was a hotbed of crime and crack. But why automatically turn to the people of color, Latino or black? I am of Latino descent. So I know that when something goes wrong all the time, people are looking at what we did. And I don't understand why that is like that. But I know that...
Wait. Hold on, caller, real quick. When you say what we did, who is we? I'm sorry. Who are you saying we?
As far as...
Right, make your question more clear.
Okay, so I have family that... a brother-in-law that had gone to jail, and his case that he had proved that he may have had a joint in his ashtray, he wasn't smoking it, but suddenly now, for that case, he had, he's in jail for 6 years for having a, that. Now, maybe he was wrong, yes, but because the officers had said that he was resisting arrest, he is a calm man, very, very calm. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
Okay,
I
can you...
the fact that when things go on, they automatically turn to one group of people or two groups of people, whoever's around, and a team, and they go that route first.
Right. Are you? Did you have a question, caller? Because we do have a lot of callers on the line. We want to kind of keep it moving. Do you have a question for our guest?
The question is, now, you talked about a revolution. Revolution, does that include more people than a group of people? Or are you just talking in general? Or I was curious.
Well, coming from a Pan-Africanist perspective, a revolutionary Pan-African nationalist perspective, that revolution will be a revolution for, by, and in the interest of people of African descent. I do not endorse multicultural revolutions, because there's not a single multicultural revolution that has ever benefited black people. People have benefited from our participation, but we have not benefited from them. So I believe if this to be any more incarcerating, any more dying, any more killing, or anything else, that it must be done for black people, by black people, with us controlling the agenda and the direction of that struggle.
I agree.
That's right.
I agree.
That's
and
right.
I don't agree with the illegals that are coming in that are also hurting the African-American community. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. All right. Thank you, caller.
Thank you.
Let me say something. I think she was also mentioning about the Trump comment that I made. The reason why I said that and mentioned him is because I think it's ridiculous that he can be running this country and he can't even admit when he's wrong. I think that's a major flaw. So that's why I said that, and I think it matters that he can't even acknowledge when he was wrong about something, and then he's running the country. That's not, you don't even want a husband that can't even admit when they're wrong, let alone a person in a position to run the country that's overseeing millions and billions of people. So.
Right. Okay. Now, before we get to other callers, I do want to ask Dr. Umar Johnson this. Because growing up in the 80s and 90s as a black male, I kind of realized that going like jail was kind of like a rites of passage for black men. Because me growing up and seeing uncles incarcerated, cousins incarcerated, and then I look up and see the people I idolize going to jail, like Tupac, Mike Tyson. Even today, you got Lil Wayne, Gucci Mane, T.I., like every major rapper or entertainer that's black has had some type of run-in with the law. So subconsciously, it's like, what's going on in jail that, you know, all these black men are getting sent to jail? So subconsciously, I kind of wanted to know what's going on with that. And being that you deal with young black boys a lot, I'm hearing some background noise. But being that you deal with young black boys a lot, do you see that there's a subconscious need to want to go to jail or see what's in jail that's kind of motivating or getting brothers trapped in that cycle of going to prison? Is there some type of subconscious thing going on there?
I think it's unconscious as well as conscious. I believe that the gangster rap community have done a disservice to the socialization of black males in this country. What I mean by that is they have created a narrative that says you have to go to jail in order to become a man. Incarceration proves masculinity. That is the narrative that is being pushed by our gangster rappers, and unfortunately it falls right into the hands of the American power structure that wants to economically disenfranchise as many black men as possible by way of mass incarceration. So yes, without question, you even see it with most of our rappers. They deliberately set themselves up to go to jail because they can not only sell more albums, but from a black conscious perspective, it makes them feel that they're more of a man to say that I've been to jail. So now incarceration has become the new way to prove your masculinity.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I just wanted to know that I wasn't crazy. Yes, sir. Thank you for that. Queen Roger, let's go to the call line, see if we get some callers. And callers, please, if you can make your question and comment precise so we can get to other callers and let Doc answer the question, please. Thank you.
Okay, area code 312-316. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. You have a question or a comment.
Yes. This is really an interesting topic, but I see it going all over the place. But I want to go back to that point about when they see us. I've seen the documentary. I watched it and then got caught into all four series of it. And it captivated me till I saw it all the way to the end. I advise everybody who haven't saw it to see it, because then you will know what the talk is in the world. And everybody that saw it, it was almost, it touched you. I don't know who the directors was of the film, but it was definitely
Ava DuVernay. Ava DuVernay.
Hello. It was definitely
Ava DuVernay.
Hello?
Go ahead, brother. No, I was telling you the director. Go ahead. But the director is Ava DuVernay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, sir. And it was an eye-opener. And I've seen Roots, and I keep up with black movements, and along with you, Doctor, all the points that's made throughout for us, the blacks, and how they see us and everything. But it shows you some serious up-to-date things from the president, for when the way he saw those black guys and how a lot of people prejudged them, especially the police. They was just basically want to get that case solved. The boys were in the park at the time, but it go to show you, when they looking to get something cleared up, just because they see you, you suspect. And it's almost like how we, even as a society, we prejudge people based on what we see. You may see guys with hoods on or what. Even myself, if I'm out at night or I can see a situation, I could pull up to a gas station or a store and somebody just don't look right, I'm quick to prejudge. So the movie opened a lot of eyes, but it goes to show you how the police or how as a society look at people, as whites look at blacks. When they see us, they already look at us like danger threats. And so it was in whatever they say, their word is solid. It's like if you're going to question somebody, what you see, and they was taking opinions like that, and the blacks became instantly suspect. And based on that, it just go to show you that not only do we need to keep ourselves cautious, even me as myself, when I go places, I make sure that how I approach people. If somebody at the ATM machine, I just don't run up on them because I know how I'm being looked, and I don't want nobody running up on me because I give them the same reaction the same way. We just live in a different society today where you have to be extremely careful on how you talk, your appearance, what you do, how you talk as respectful. But one of the things that gets me, that was a point in it, was one point in the movie that I want to stress. It was when the young man was incarcerated and his father coached him to tell a lie just to get out. What hurts?
Right, you're talking about Antoine McCray.
Right, what hurts anybody, I'm speaking for anybody, white, black, or what, is when you take the plea deal to get out of a situation. A lot of people, when you put them handcuffs on them, all they get, they cannot handle one day in jail. Jail is terrible. Anybody that's been incarcerated or locked, even myself, I've been there, it is horrible. You want to get out of there as soon as you can. sometimes a lawyer, you can get a good lawyer, he cannot get you out of there fast enough. But it's when they torture you and put that plea deal. Look, now, if your friends say you did it, you go do the crime. They'll turn you against each other. Because why? They put you in a life or death situation, and that's what the justice system has put people in today, in a life or
that's
death
right.
situation. And when you put
right.
in a
you
life
got about
or death
a minute
situation,
to wrap it up, Tyler.
Okay.
You got about a minute, Tyler, so we can get to wrap it up.
Doctor, they mentioned about the revolution. Question. Is there a secondary option instead of a revolution?
Okay, yes, indeed. We'll see if we can get the call. I think his line may have dropped, but we'll see if we can get to the caller. But just hold on,
man,
and we'll try
me,
and get that question answered for you. Go ahead, Brother Mufasa. Thank you, caller.
Yeah, thanks, caller. So, yeah, I mean, that was a good question.
We can get to another call. I want to put this out there real quick for the family because, like we stated before, these type of things that's going on with the Central Park Five, as far as black men being falsely accused, is still going on today. And I want everyone listening to look up Chanel Lewis. Chanel Lewis. This is the same type of case that was with the Central Park Five, but this just happened last year. There was a so-called jogger in the park. She ended up getting killed, and they say sexually assaulted, and they charged this young man, Chanel Lewis, with this crime, even though from the evidence and looking at the case, clearly you can see that this young man does not have the mental capacity or the physical capacity to commit a crime like this. So that is a case that's been going on. He's already been convicted. His family is looking into alternative methods to, get this case looked into. But look up Chanel Lewis, and this stuff is going on today as we speak. And this also happened in New York as well. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Hey, Brother Kev.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I was going to say something to the caller, but my phone had dropped when he said it's a secondary solution. And
right. Go ahead with it.
I don't see a secondary solution. My solution is separation. So that's it for me. Now, with Brother Kev or Roger, they may have a secondary solution, but I don't.
Well, I mean, as far as the criminal justice system, I kind of agree with what Dr. Umar Johnson was saying is it's working exactly how it was designed to work. Do you know that over 90% of the cases that are not even tried, but 90% of the cases that are brought before the courts are given a plea deal? That means that even if you're not guilty, once you get in that system, they're going to offer you a plea deal with less time because they tell you if you take this less time, you'll be fine. But if you go to trial, you risk enormous amounts of time. You know, you risk 10 to 20 years of time as opposed to taking this 3 to 5. You know what I'm saying? So 90% of the cases are pleaded out. So the system is designed the way it's designed. I personally feel like the system needs to be destroyed and rebuilt. I don't think there's any repair that can be done because if we look in a lot of cities, we do have black prosecutors, right? We do have some black DAs. We do have black police chiefs. We do have black mayors. And the same thing is continuing to happen as far as black people getting falsely accused of crimes. So I think the system needs to be destroyed myself and rebuilt because this particular system that we're under, there's no fixing it.
Yeah,
no matter what black person you have in what position, there's no fixing it as far as I'm concerned. You know, so if you're just joining this family, this Collective Minds Radio, we are discussing the psychology of the Central Park Five. We did have a special guest in the building, but I believe the line may have dropped. We're working on trying to get him back as well.
Yeah, let's take
okay, now, Roger, yeah, did you want to get to another caller? We can take another caller while we're working on that.
Okay, okay, area code 319-572. Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. You have a question or comment?
It's also economics. If you fill a jail up full of poor black folks, they can't get out. Then you offer them, and then like Kevin said, they offer them that plea deal, lesser time. So a lot of them are actually more scared to go to trial. They try to intimidate them with the trial, so they just do the plea deal.
Right.
And like Dude said, they're trying to get up out there, get up out of that jail. Because from what I hear, they'd rather be sitting in prison than sitting in the jail.
Right, right.
Because it's totally different. But
right.
But a lot of it's economics, and they fill up the jail full of poor black people who can't afford to get out, can't afford that good lawyer like that white man. Like if you
right.
really look like a white man commits a rape or rape or something like that, he got the money to get out on bail, as well as the
That's
black
right.
man, he stuck.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
But. That's all I need to say.
That's right. All right. We appreciate you, caller. Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense because, you know, we living in a society where you're almost punished for being poor. You dig what I'm saying? Being poor is actually a crime because if you can't, again, if you can't pay the bill, hire a lawyer, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be sitting up in jail. Again, all we got to do is look at the Khalif Browder story as an example. This young man was held in Rikers Island for supposedly stealing a book bag, and he didn't have the bail money, so he ended up spending months and months in jail and being in jail and being in Rikers Island. It kind of messed his head up, so he gets out, and he was never the same. And ended up committing suicide. You dig what I'm saying? So this all happened because he couldn't afford a lawyer or couldn't afford the bail until his trial came to get out of jail. And this happens time and time again. It happens a lot. And we have to come to the realization that, you know, these are the type of things that are going on within this criminal justice system that we so-called have here. Okay. But, yeah, Roger or Mufasa, Rob, y'all want to respond or we can go to the callers, which I want to do. Roger.
Area code 314-568. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment?
Waiting.
Caller, you're on with Collective Minds Radio. You have a question or comment? Area code
314-568.
Okay, maybe they just.
No, I'm actually just listening, but I'll shoot one comment out. But it's actually crazy that stuff like this going on every day. But it take a Netflix movie or something like that for people to open their eyes to something that's going on every day. This ain't nothing new.
Right.
This ain't the first situation like this. I think.
Right.
I think next week is gonna be a whole another story like this. It's just crazy that they were just lucky ones to be able to hire somebody to make a movie about them. But this ain't
exactly.
new. It go on all the time. It go on every day.
That's right. Yep.
That's right. That's all I wanted to put out there, though.
All right.
Yeah,
appreciate you calling.
We had touched on that earlier. You've been 100% right that, and I made that comment, like, regular people, we just looking at each other's lives like movies. We watch it, we see what they go through, and then we move on.
Right. And hope it don't happen to us.
There you go. Exactly. Yep.
Right. People just be hoping it don't happen to them. But I think one of the things that we can learn, and anybody listening to this, you know, you should tell your kids that if they're ever in a situation where they have to deal with police or detectives or they're being interrogated, do not say a word, right? Do not say a word. Only thing you should be saying is lawyer, and if you're underage, you should be saying parent, because you should get in there and you should not say anything, because ultimately that was the thing that convicted these brothers, was their confession. Even though we know the confession was coerced, because, you know, because they had a confession on tape and given their story and they confessed to this crime, that's what ultimately did them in, because they had no physical evidence. So what we can learn as a group, and as far as establishing a code of conduct, when you encounter the police or you're in it, if you're ever in a situation where you're being interrogated, do not say a word, because like they read you your rights and they say these words can and will be used against you. They're telling you that for a reason. So the best thing you can do, whether you did it or not, is to be quiet until you can get, you know, a lawyer, proper, you know, consultation, or you can get your parent if you're underage. So, you know, that's one thing we could take from this, as far as putting, you know, putting in a code book and establishing a code. Don't say a word when dealing with them. That's your best option. Okay. Yeah, did you want to, let's go to call lines and
okay,
see what we got here.
Okay, area code 314-381. Caller, you on with Collective Minds Radio? Do you have a question or comment?
Kevin, you're putting out some misleading information again.
Okay, please tell
New York
me.
Times.
What was that?
New York Times. I want y'all to look it up. Jogger trial jury relied on physical evidence, not tapes. The jury consists of three whites, three Hispanics, and three black. Is your email K Spence, by the way?
Yeah, at Gmail. So hold on, let's be
all
clear.
All right, I tell you what, I sent it to
you. Lewis case? You talking about the Chanel Lewis case?
I'm talking about the,
is that the case
Central Park
about?
Five.
The Central Park Five, there was no physical evidence, sir.
The New York Times. Where'd
you
find that out at? So if you found that out in a newspaper, here's the New York Times saying it was dependent on evidence.
No,
why did they
there
get
was
out?
No physical evidence. Why did they
listen?
Get
wait a minute. Right? Hang on for a second. That ain't me saying
what
it. Argue with the New York Times.
No,
say jogger trial.
Said evidence, but there's no physical evidence. There was no DNA.
I'm reading what's said here on the newspaper. It says jogger trial jury relied on physical evidence, not tape. They had a grand jury. The grand jury was based on evidence, and they came back with a true bill. Then they had a trial. Now, the thing is that the technology that they had at that time in 1989 wasn't like it was a few years later. Police would not have even scanned the area for DNA evidence because they didn't even know of the technology. And the reason why they settled is because the Basio settled. If it had went to trial,
okay,
I don't know what would have happened. Now, I'm not saying that these people should have spent time for something that they did do, but I tell you what, they might have got condoned for something that they didn't do, but there was other things that they done that was criminal that they was never charged for nor convicted of.
No,
that's a fact.
Now you're just talking. What else did they do?
I am not just talking.
You are, because you,
I'm not.
You don't
I'm
have
reading.
Any evidence. There
I'll
was
send
no
you.
Evidence.
I'll send you the information. Anybody there in your group got a computer? Google jogger trial jury relied on physical evidence, not tapes. The New York Times.
And what did I just get through saying?
Okay,
the New York Times. Go ahead.
Oh.
Well, I was just going to say.
Then there's another article. Huh?
Go ahead with your other article, because I have a question.
There's another.
Go ahead.
Have you looked that up? There's another article called the Central Park Fire, calling them murderous thugs. But regardless of what the title called, and I sent that to you, it gives a whole list of things that these people was guilty of doing. Beating up other folks in the park and stuff. Now, you know, here's the thing.
So
you said what you were teaching. Look,
no,
man,
so
you're going to have to read
the people.
Listen, Kevin,
I've
read
read
the article.
I've looked at this case.
Read the
so
article.
Why did this, so do you know that the people, there was a man who was beat up on a bike, and there was another gentleman that was beat up as well.
Yes, there
These
were.
People took the stand in the trial, and they did not identify any of the five as being the perpetrators of that crime.
It was supposed to have been about 30 of them in the park. But here's the point. They had a trial,
okay.
And the jury came back and said they was guilty. It wasn't all white folks. It was Hispanic and black.
That's not the – no. See, but you're not taking in full account of everything that went into this. First of all, the judge, whose name was Gallagher, was notorious for sending folks to Rikers Island. They purposely picked him because they knew he had a high conviction rate in his courtrooms. Number two, you're not taking into consideration that the assistant DA, which was Elizabeth Lederer and Linda Feinstein, who was the DA at the time, these people purposely knew that these kids didn't do it, but they wanted to convict them based on other things that happened in the park.
Well, you
right?
know, like
based
I said before,
bikers getting beat up and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like I
how
said
you
before,
convict someone of rape based on
and
something
the same
else?
Thing goes on
Even
in St. Louis
beat
too.
Up somebody that's still not rape.
It's well, now, well, I don't know because if you just
saying?
Lay on
that's
a woman,
still not rape.
Wait a minute, hang on for a second. There's the definition of rape is very expansive. There's a federal definition for rape. If you, the lady that's in there with you, if I was to rub her on her thighs, that's rape according to federal definition. So the federal definition for rape is very broad and inconspicuous. But like I said before, read the articles, man, because that's the only thing people at the time could go by. So they made their determination by that.
Okay,
no,
let me
sir.
Say something.
What are you talking about? So what are you talking about, Emmett Till? Are you talking like an Emmett Till?
We ain't talking
case?
About no Emmett Till. This was in 1989.
But it's very related. That's very relatable
it
to this case.
It is not related.
Bro.
Well, here's the thing. Let me say something. Let me hop in there. Okay, to a degree, yes, you're right. If you're talking about the community, that's the information they have to go by the papers. Right, that's true. However,
the nation, really.
What was printed in the, whatever. Let me finish up here. What was printed in the papers was incorrect, and the community already have an understanding of the crookedness that goes on with the criminal justice system.
Okay,
secondly,
can I stop you right
you're
there?
You're saying no, no. Let
and
me
we got
up.
Plenty of time.
Secondly,
okay.
No. Secondly,
go ahead.
When you said you just made a comment, you didn't expand, so I'm just going off of you said that it said it was based off of physical evidence, okay? Maybe it was physical evidence, but it wasn't their physical evidence. It was somebody else's physical evidence. So who cares that it says physical evidence? That just means they had some physical evidence. That does not mean that it was their physical evidence.
All right, let me address what you just said.
According to the
hang on for a second. Let me address what she said. Man, you guys are worse than a white jury.
Where did the confession come in place?
Right.
You worse than all white jury.
Oh,
I thought
man.
They made them guys confess. I thought they
hang on for a second. They didn't even use the video tape confessions for the jury. Here's the thing. You, ma'am,
no,
you just, the first point you made, you are basing that on what you know today. It's not based on what was known in 1989, 1990. We have to admit that.
People knew that.
No,
the,
it was
the,
no, they
people,
did
people
not. How did they know?
People, because
I'm
they
in St. Louis. I'm reading the paper.
because it had been crooked all along. So they knew what we were dealing with. I was in St. Louis in 1989.
I'm reading the St. Louis Post-Dispatch about that case. It's not being naive. It's true.
Of course,
I'm in St. Louis reading the newspaper. So what am I gonna go by?
Do you understand? Listen, brother. Do you understand that all the major newspapers in the United States get their sources from either the Associated Press or Reuters? These are media conglomerates that sell the American public the same story. They run the same story, the same headlines. So let's stop it with they didn't know.
Well, no, that's not true. People would have voted for the family of the people.
And
you just like to talk over
people.
Do y'all ever have these forums out in public? These discussions?
I mean,
you need to have them out in public one time where people can talk.
No problem.
All right. You let me go over to Emporium Bookstore over there on Sarah and schedule, or even at Julius Davis Library. Get that library. Let's have this discussion out in public. Because you guys talk over folks, don't let people talk. It's not that we try to bogart, trying to get something out. And you couldn't do that
exactly,
in public.
But you can't come with misinformation.
But you arguing with me, argue with the newspaper.
And I've already established the newspaper with in cahoots.
Brother Kevin, how is the newspaper in cahoots, man?
No.
What do you mean how? They
Brother
write
Kevin,
the story.
Man, just please, okay, let me just say this real fast.
Well, why come DeBasio didn't let it go to trial? Maybe he's in cahoots.
Okay, so you're done. Let me go in here to say something now. Because
yeah, go ahead.
Y'all
don't like me, do you?
Actually, we enjoy you, and I know I do, and that's why I'm getting ready to tell
you.
No, something.
It's not about
that.
You
don't like me because of what I know and what I say, but go ahead.
About what you know.
No,
oh, my
that's
God.
That's not it.
Okay,
it. No.
That would be no reason to not like you, but what I will say is what would not make me like you if you falsely accused me of something that I did not do, which was talk over you. And we're not arguing at you. You called to make a point about newspapers. We are simply saying why we don't agree with that. If you want to take it and feel like it's a personal attack against you, you're the one brought this information. So this
All right,
is why
let me
we're
ask
talking
you a question.
To you about
Let
it.
Me ask you a question. If you don't agree with that newspaper article, what newspaper article do you agree with? Because none of you was at the trial.
No, we do not. I mean,
Based on the evidence, it's very simple.
You can look
at the confession tapes and see that these kids were coerced. The confessions don't even match up. You can look at it and it doesn't take rocket science to understand that these kids were railroaded. Like, it's really not that difficult, despite what the newspapers report, because the newspaper only reporting what the DA and what the detectives are giving them.
So if they had to put in what Anthony McRae said, quote, we charged her, we got her on the ground, everybody started hitting her and stuff. She was on the ground, everybody stomping and everything. Then we got I wrapped one arm, some other kids grabbed one arm, and we grabbed her legs and stuff. Then we all took turns getting on her, getting on top of her. I mean, this is them saying these things.
After hours of interrogation.
No, it was not. It was when they left the park.
Yes, it was. No,
this was not. This was after they left the park. It was one person in the car.
Even a much better.
No, sir.
Well, you come up with all kinds of excuses.
Brother Kevin, even a much better point. It was, for one, we already know, we can all agree, or should be able to agree, that these were children. And they also lied to them, whether it was 5 minutes, 2 minutes, an hour, 2 days. They told those kids that if they told them something that they wanted to hear, they would be able to go home. So therefore, if you're dealing with kids, whether it was 2 minutes in it, 5 minutes in it, that's why they were able to say these things.
If you read the story, the transcripts, they only took when the parents came for those that was underage. That's what they did. Now, here I'm saying this. it's too bad that there's a statute of limitation, because there was things that these people done. And I'm not saying that they should be charged for something that they didn't do, but too often times, especially in the black community, you have criminals and thugs committing crimes, and they never get charged for it. And you complain about it all the time. Like you say, the community don't snitch for whatever reason. And that stuff there is a factual
thing.
That's
a myth. That's a myth.
Hey, let me add something right quick, y'all. This is Brother Mufasa, because we want to take another call before we get off here. But I want to address something that Pianki said. Now, when you said community forum, that would be a wonderful thing. We would love to do that. Now, I'm at Progressive quite often, and I have spoken with Brother Lancaster, Jonathan, your boy. So when you come back to St. Louis, please make sure you let us know so we can have a meet and greet at Progressive. I think it would be a wonderful thing.
I'll tell Jonathan.
We love you,
make sure that you guys sign out.
Cause we love you, brother. We ain't got nothing against you. We definitely love you, and we enjoy, you know what I'm saying, learning from you. So I just wanted to put that out there.
All right, well, look, I got to get off of here, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Yes, indeed. Peace, scholar. Thank you. All right. Collective Minds, we're coming down to the last. We're coming down to the last 10 minutes of the show.
I knew you were going to do that.
Right. So we have been discussing the psychology of the Central Park Five as it goes here. Did you want to get one more caller before we sign off?
Okay, let's go with one more caller. Okay, caller 314-616. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. Do you have a question or a comment? Area code 314-616. Call you on with Collective Minds Radio. You have a question or a comment.
Hey, peace and blessings, everyone. How's everyone doing this evening?
Peace,
Colin.
Hey, how you doing?
The gentleman that was on call before me kind of diverted where I was going to go with the conversation. You know, I would love to set up something where we can kind of focus in on some of the things that he's saying, because it seems like a lot of times when we have these topics, he's coming in another direction. And maybe he may be of have hold of information that I'm unaware of. But the thing I want to call, and I hate that we lost Dr. Umar, because I have not seen it yet. Based on you guys that have viewed it, is this something that I should really engage in? Because for me, I chose to withhold from this kind of thing because it seems like we're reintroducing ourselves to the same narrative over and over and over and over again, where we're seeing how we're being mistreated, mistrialed. You know, this person sat down for 20 years. This person did, you know, a quarter of their life or whatever. So is this
right.
something that I should be engaging in? And if so, what can I expect to take from it? What direction do we truly, what can we truly take from something like this? Because if we're just doing the same for informational purposes, for me, it becomes a waste of time, because it seems like we're just gathering information and not getting solutions out of it.
Right. Agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
I would say
you want to go ahead, Mufasa?
I'm going to be real quick. Because I understand where the brother coming from, because I get tired of seeing that stuff over and over again myself. But I say it's informative for the youth who don't understand to use that as a teachable moment for them. In that regard, that's about it for me. But, yeah, I get tired of rewatching that same stuff over and over. Like I said earlier, I know of the case. So I really didn't need to watch the Netflix thing. But, you know, for informational purposes for the youth, yeah, it's something good for them to see, and maybe we need to talk to them about it. But that's about as far as it go for me, brother.
Gotcha.
Right. And, Ray, right on, Carla. And just real quick, I definitely understand what you're saying. And like I say, I even made the comparison to a slave movie, which I stopped watching slave movies a few years back because it was the same type of traumatic, you know, reliving all the dirt and grimy things that they did to us and things like that. And it was just, you know, bringing up some bad emotions. And this movie did do the same thing. However, I would say it can be used as a teaching moment if you have young men in your household, if you have young children, it can be used at a teaching moment. But I'm kind of with you, and I ask the question, is this just a way for the system to flex its power on black people, like saying, okay, look, this is what we're doing, you know, this is out there, and what y'all going to do about it? You know what I'm saying? Is it that type mm-hmm. of thing where they're just kind of flexing power on us? Or, you know, can we use it to actually build and change some things within ourselves to kind of navigate through this system? So I'm with you, and I kind of ask the same question because I am kind of tired of seeing, you know, the system just flexes power on us and just show all the devious things that they do, but then no change ever happens. You dig what I'm saying? So, you know, I struggle yeah. with that too, so I'm with you on that one, Carla. But appreciate you calling. We're coming down to the last 5 minutes, so, you know, we'll let Roger and Mufasa wrap us up here.
Mufasa?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, last thought.
Thank you. I was really thinking about, you know, what we just said, and I appreciate the call of, you know, calling in and saying it like that because, yeah, I mean, and what you said there, Brother Kev, maybe it is, but they're just putting it out there as a ha-ha-ha look, and they get their kicks and rocks off of stuff like that, off of sitting back
right.
watching. But here it is, like I said earlier, the same thing, you know, entity, Netflix, but you couldn't show my minister's documentary about his musical career. But you can throw this up in our faces. So, yeah, I didn't want to see it. I definitely still won't see it on their platform. Because I do feel like it's a ha-ha slap in the face. But, you know, when they do stuff negative, we can steal away from it, flip the script, and use it against them. So just like we said about a teachable moment, all I would say is take this Netflix film if you choose to watch it, or you can be like me and find it on and watch it on another source. But yeah, go over it with your kids, go over it with young people, so that they are aware of the things that they have to watch out for and the pitfalls that they could fall into in this world. That's all I would say on that. Just make sure we show the youth and go with them and continue to teach our kids so that they understand what they need to be aware of as black youth in this country.
That's right.
Okay. Yes, yes.
All right.
And, and I'd like to just say, just add as well, but first I want to thank everybody for calling in, for tuning in with us. I apologize for the technical difficulties that we had with our guest, but I still appreciate the opportunity and a little bit of time that he was able to give us. But I wasn't able to get him back on, but hopefully sometime in the future we'll be able to get him back on and we can have another discussion with him. But I do appreciate everybody for calling in and continuing to support us. For me, myself, this was a teachable moment. Everything that I do, I try to learn from it. I try to always stay in the student form, you know. So you have to ask yourself, are you the teacher or the student? So I try to learn from the things that I'm involved in. I wasn't that familiar with the case. I just kind of heard about it. So the movie, for me, when it came out on Netflix, was it gave me a little more insight about the whole situation. So it did help me to give me a little more information about it because I wasn't that aware. But I just want to, again, thank everybody for tuning in. Check us out next Sunday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We have some more good topics coming up, more guests. So if you have any show topics, ideas, also you can email us. Feel free at collectivesminds@yahoo.com. Follow us on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook, Twitter, and for any for our upcoming shows. So tune in next week. Peace.
That's right. Peace, peace.
That's right. Peace, peace.
Stand on your square. We on the earn. We about to earn out. Tune in and turn it up to hear what we talking about. Whether it's old or a new point. Call in with your viewpoint and add to our collective of colorful perspective. The brothers, word to the mothers of the queens and the kings. We gon' get into some things, dig deep and going deeper. Waking up the sleeper, who be been the keeper? Yeah, your boy done found a keeper. See, we talking.
Collective mind.